All right, everyone, welcome to episode one of a new podcast that I'm obviously excited about. It's the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. If you guys are listening, you obviously follow on Twitter. It's hosted by myself, Reeks from Barstool. And I brought in my guy from Wisconsin, Ben Brust. Ben, what's going on, man?
What's up, Bobby?
So we got to tell everyone how it came about, right? Because you played at Wisconsin. Obviously, I did not play at Kentucky, but I am a Kentucky guy. Those two don't really match, especially how your last game ended. So it took a lot. So it reached out by our guy Carl. Everyone knows him, Barstool Carl from Redline Radio. On Saturday, we were watching the games, and then we got a message. What do you guys think about a podcast? And immediately, it clicked.
Wait. So you don't even know that I was with Carl?
Oh, no, not at first. Like, he was just like, my friend Ben Brust. And I was like, I know who he is. Like, I've talked to him before. And then he was like, oh, yeah, I'm here with him. And I was like, well, why didn't you just tell me that from the get-go?
Yeah, well, it was his 30th birthday party, so he really was not coherent. I was like, I was watching him a couple times, like, messaging you. I was like, all right, take your time.
So Carl set us up. We've been texting the last couple days, getting everything situated. Coming up with a name, which I think we nailed because we're both guards. I love a bounce pass. I'm sure you went to Wisconsin, so you were forced to love bounce passes.
Well, let's state the obvious here. We're both short white guys.
Exactly. I mean, you said it better than I did. So I think it fits perfectly. So that's how it kind of started. We obviously have the Twitter feed, which you guys can all follow at Fundamentally SD. To try to limit the characters. We tweet it out all the time. But the plan going forward, we're both excited. The plan going forward, it's going to be a college basketball-centric base. But we will go into the NBA draft. We'll talk about, I'm sure, about NBA playoffs just because that's kind of the dead period for college basketball. But, you know, we'll talk about recruiting. We'll talk about in the offseason, we'll get some guests on, recap the season, preview the next season. Obviously, two guys that drop a new podcast heading in the Sweet 16 week. There's a limited amount of time on this specific season. But what better time than now? Everyone's watching college basketball.
Yeah, we can get some good guests, I'm sure.
Yeah.
From maybe some players, but no one cares about the players. They'll be political. We can get some coaches, some fun commentators and analysts. So we'll work through that, but I'm excited to get going.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. Like I said, everyone's watching college basketball now. We kind of have like that 3-week grace period where everyone's all in with the tournament and conference tournaments. But yeah, the goal is to kind of keep everyone, interested the year round. Like I said, we'll talk about draft, things like that, because while the draft is NBA, you're talking about guys leaving early, who's testing the water, who's coming back. It really changes the landscape of college basketball, especially when you get the surprises like today with Robert Williams. So those are things that we'll talk about going forward. But today, obviously, with Sweet 16 week, we're recording here on Tuesday night, like 8:30 Eastern. I think we got to get right into the with your region up there and your boys. We'll start with the left side of the bracket for everyone listening. Top left, which is the East. First game, obviously, Wisconsin wasn't expected to be there. That's just what happens with an 8 seed, especially when they're playing reigning champs Villanova. I personally thought Villanova or Wisconsin was an ideal matchup for Villanova.
Let's take a step back for a second. Number one, unfortunate for Villanova to have to play Wisconsin in the second round. Too many times, I'm sick of the tournament committee putting teams that play in the round of 32 that should be a Sweet 16 game. It happened to your boys at Wichita State. I cannot stand that. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. I could go on a rant, and I'm sure everyone did, about Wisconsin being an eighth seed and Minnesota being a fifth seed, beat them twice on the road at home, beat Maryland late in the season after we lost 5 of 6. So it just doesn't really make sense to me. And
that's the thing. I was okay with Wisconsin being 8 seed, but Minnesota should have been like a 7. And yeah, I think everyone would have been fine with it.
It wasn't the 8 seed necessarily.
It was where everyone else was.
There wasn't top 25 wins. They really didn't look good when they were winning either. I'm sure like the eye test was taken into account from the committee when they saw they were beating Rutgers in overtime, and it was ugly. But to have an 8 seed and then Minnesota be a 5 didn't make sense to the world.
No, not that, and even Maryland is a 6 with Wisconsin as an 8. but they're there. I mean, they won, they're there. That's all
yeah.
that matters. So,
and then I guess my point for that is it's stupid for the defending national champions, who are the number one overall seed, yep. to have to play Virginia Tech or Wisconsin and Gonzaga with Vanderbilt and Northwestern. I just don't get the logic. And then I guess I'm going to go on a rant already. Kentucky was the number one overall two seed. Am I correct there?
They were five on the S-curve.
Do you see what they have to get through to go to the Final Four?
I just don't get it.
UNC, Villanova, the two arguably the best teams who should have had a pretty easy route, not an easy route, but a better route to have a championship rematch, got brutally screwed.
Well, I would say for Carolina, they at least had what I thought was a relatively weak draw to the Elite Eight. Like, I think they matched up well against Butler, which is obviously how it's played out. So I like immediately put them in the Elite Eight. But from there, where you're talking about either getting UCLA or Kentucky, I mean, those are the two worst draws for Carolina, outside of obviously Duke, but you're not going to get Duke there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess before we keep going, let's just jump back to the Wisconsin Gator. We can go back to that. I'm sure we can touch on college officiating. That's been a huge
cut. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the story. But yeah, let's start with the top left, the East bracket.
Already can't stay focused. This is great. We're off to a great start.
That's our difference. We're not going to stay on one track. All right, so Wisconsin, Florida. Florida's -2. It's a Friday, Sunday regional. What's your take on the – I'll default to you on this one. What's your take on Wisconsin-Florida matchup? Because to me in that region, and even looking at the region as a whole, those four teams, Florida's the one team that can beat you with offense, I feel like, more than South Carolina, Baylor, and Wisconsin.
Yeah, one quick note as well. You mentioned the spread. We're going to be doing spread picks for each game. Totaling up. We started talking, obviously, when we're putting this together. We went 4-1-1 together on Sunday. So cute, I know.
I went 1-7 on Saturday.
Yeah, we're going to get everyone on the right ship here.
Yeah, I just gave out a bunch of free money on Saturday.
Yeah, Vegas.
Exactly. So, all right, so yeah, Florida's -2. On KenPom, looking at KenPom, which is a site I love. Florida's favored by 3 on there. So it's expected to obviously be a close game. But like I said, Florida's offense is, I feel like, kind of the difference in that region. We're just looking at it on paper. Florida plays the quickest out of everybody. They get the ball up and down about 16 seconds per possession. Wisconsin's like 19.9. What's your take on this game? Like I said, I'll default to you. These are your guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, Wisconsin with quick guards is definitely a challenge. I mean, the experience has got to carry them here. Florida arguably was playing some of the best basketball in the country. I think they won 9 straight in January and February before they lost to UK. The only team that they can't beat is Vanderbilt.
Seriously. They're so happy not to see Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and Wisconsin really doesn't play anything like Vandy. It's kind of a unique matchup, exactly why I think KenPom's and the spread is right. It's going to be a close one. It's going to be a grinder. It's not going to be a fun game to watch, to be completely honest. But I think Wisconsin's experience is being undervalued right now. I've seen everyone come out with all the new seed rankings, the new power rankings.
Yeah, everyone has Wisconsin like third.
Yeah, everyone has Wisconsin third. I saw Parrish or Rothstein put him like 13th or something out of 16. I was like, that's ridiculous.
I think I had him 9. I did my top 16 today.
Yeah.
I had him 9.
That's fair, but, I mean, they have experience. The senior class has been to 2 Final Fours and a Sweet 16, all of playing somewhat significant minutes in one each year. So you can't teach that. I guess Florida's been a team that's been hot in March, too. I think they've won – they've been to 5 Sweet 16s in the last 7 years. So a game of experience. It's going to be a grind. I'm leaning Badgers because whatever. Like I just want the program to be what, you know, we kind of started.
Right.
And I'm not going to get too much into the Wisconsin stuff because I don't want to be a homer. But I'm going to be a homer because I played there.
That's encouraged.
Yeah, and we went to a Final Four in 2014. We've been the Sweet 16 six of the last 7 years, only team to do that. We're trying to break that threshold of being an elite program. And I think if we, the guys on the team, if they believe in that and take the experience that they have, there's no reason why they can't get by Florida, who really isn't that good. It's just going to be a grind and come down to one possession.
Would you say it's fair to say Wisconsin's like a tier two program right now? Like, obviously the tier one programs are the traditional blue bloods, the Kentucky, you know, Carolina Dukes, those guys. Do you think Wisconsin's that tier two when you look at, you know, maybe like Arizona's, you know, Michigan's with their kind of their history in the 90s? Do you think they're in that tier, like the tier two?
I mean, I hear you. What's funny is, to me, when you look at the teams that are in the Sweet 16 right now, are all the programs you just listed, the Kansases, the Carolinas, the UCLA, yeah, the Kentucky.
That's why this tournament's awesome. It's because we do have these teams.
Yeah, and as much as people root for upsets, which I do too, obviously, at the end of the day, you're going to get a couple, but when it gets to the Elite Eight, you really see who the best teams. There's maybe one Cinderella left if you're lucky, but those top eight are the teams that have been pretty good all year, and at the end of the day are peaking at the right time. So it's pretty indicative of, minus the ACC, I guess, at this point, of who is prepped to make a run here.
I mean, everybody wants to watch the 2015 Final Four. Nobody wants to watch Butler VCU again.
Exactly.
Like, no. Ratings were there for a reason.
It's terrible, yeah. And I'm sure attendance as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just how it is. So, all right, so you're leaning Wisconsin in this one. I like what Wisconsin's been doing lately.
Cautiously, just because I don't really like the matchup. I just don't like the matchup.
Yeah, so
like
let me ask you this. What does Florida do, or what does Florida need to do? How do you beat this Wisconsin team? Like, what beats Wisconsin?
I think the quick guards got to penetrate and make the right decisions. If Wisconsin can slow them down, make them take tough shots and get some stops early, that's great. But if the guards get going and get confident, that just makes for a long, ugly game. And we don't win games right now. When we lost 5 of 6, I keep saying we. I'm going to do that. We lost 5
you played
of
there.
Six.
You're allowed.
Yeah, I know. They were given 70, 80 points up. If they keep it in the 50s, 60s, maybe low 70s, I think that's when it's getting kind of scary. So it's all about stopping the guards early and controlling the tempo.
Let me ask you this, to go a little bit in depth into the scouting report for Wisconsin. Obviously, you guys, Wisconsin is great at getting back defensively, not giving up transition points. It's kind of what it is. What's taught, you know, within the program? Is it, what's the theory in terms of not giving up transition? Like, are there certain guys that need to get back? Is there a certain game plan? What's kind of the, I guess, for lack of a better word, the traditional Wisconsin mindset in defensively not giving up transition?
I mean, anyone who's watched Wisconsin is probably going to be like, yeah, they're methodical, they're slow. But there's obviously a rhyme and reason to what we're doing, because it works. I mean, the team's finished in the top 25 like every year, top four since Bo took over in the Big Ten. So you're consistently winning every single year. And the foundation is just get back. Like, if you stop transition points, you make them set up their offense and take tough twos, no threes, no layups. Tough twos, no threes, no layups. It's really quite that simple. And no baseline. It's amazing to me watching, like, if you get beat baseline, watch. If Florida goes baseline, something good is going to happen. They're going to get fouled. They're going to pass for an open shot. It may not go in, but something positive offensively is going to work out for them.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that. And I'm looking right now, when Wisconsin gives up the 85th most of their above, well above average 3-point attempts per field goal attempts in the country.
Yeah, it's been terrible, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and it's 85th in the country.
Yeah, the 3-point defense in general, that's not a staple of how they're playing right now. But
yeah, because you guys do rank 305th giving up 38% from the 3-point line.
Yeah, I'm blaming Coach Guard. I'm blaming Coach Guard. It's going to be an ugly game. It's kind of a coin flip, and that's why I'm just going with my heart and hope and experience takes over.
It is, but I almost feel like this region is that way because the four teams are such good. Like,
it's the worst region.
I was talking to K Marco today, and we were talking about it, and I said, if you like defense, watch the West, or watch the East, like, because that's what those four teams do.
Oh, South Carolina. That's a good transition. That's a really good. Look at us go.
That's a proper transition. Yeah, like all four teams rank in the top 14 defensively in the country.
And I think it's the worst of the teams left, like the worst bracket.
I would say it's the least interesting. Like that Florida-Wisconsin game will be interesting. And that's not to say Baylor-South Carolina won't, but I think no one's really psyched to watch Baylor-South Carolina. Like you're not getting jazzed up over that game.
No, you're really not.
Which is a shame because I've said it for a while now. Scott Drew has done the best rebuilding job possibly in all of sports.
Didn't they make like zero Sweet 16s before
he wasn't allowed to play non-conference games when he got there because of the whole Scott Denny or the whole Dennehy thing and the Dave Bliss situation.
Yeah,
when you look at where they were to him now, this is he's made I think one Elite Eight and this is like his fourth Sweet 16 or something like that, third Sweet 16. To me, it might be, I think it's the best rebuilding job in sports.
What about, AP and Homer, but Wisconsin sucked forever.
Yeah, but Wisconsin, I'm just talking, when you're coming from a goddamn murder situation.
True.
when you're not allowed to play non-conference games, that's saying a lot.
They win that.
I mean, and to the point where he's, like, getting McDonald's All-American recruits and is now in, team this year has been unbelievable the top 50 recruits.
I think the theme is just tread lightly with anything regarding Baylor.
Seriously. All right, so
anything regarding
Baylor, South Carolina. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because it is kind of the
worst,
the quote worst of the eight games. Which again, it's not an insult when you say like I came out with my rankings today for I did like 16 storylines, ranking the 16 coaches, teams, players, and eight games. Somebody has to be last. It's not an insult. Like, if you're the 16th of the last 16 teams in the country remaining.
Because everyone else has already cried already and gone home.
Somebody has to be 16. This is eight, I would say, of the most intriguing games. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. Obviously, South Carolina.
What's the spread? I haven't looked at this one.
The spread in this one is Baylor is by – let me go back to it here. I just closed out without a look. Baylor by 3.5.
Yeah, see, like, I can see South Carolina hanging tough and winning because
Baylor's offense will go cold.
Yeah, and South Carolina locks up, and obviously Frank Martin is a nut job, in a nut job that we love too.
Oh, what's crazy is he's such a great guy.
Oh yeah, I've heard that.
Like he's like everybody loves him.
Had a great conversation. But don't look him in the eye when he's pissed.
No, I'll never forget when he was at Kansas State losing his mind that one year. But, yeah. To me, can Baylor hit, and it shouldn't just be that, but can Baylor hit enough threes to kind of give them that cushion over South Carolina?
Yeah, I think South Carolina's system, like the way they play, it travels well. They're going to, obviously, a neutral site. But they get in your shit. I mean, those guards are up and at them. And I don't know. Baylor plays kind of a lame style.
You know, I kind of like that 1-1-3 just because you don't see it. Like, teams aren't used to seeing a 1-1-3 zone. And they have size. Like, when you're throwing Motley and Luol out there, like, that's some serious length that you have to deal with. Not only at the paint, but kind of on the wing, too.
It almost is like a Syracuse good zone. Obviously not Syracuse this year's zone, going back in time a little bit. Like,
yeah, the traditional where you had three just bigs along the back.
Yeah, Fab Mello back there. Right.
Hakeem Warrick on the wing.
Yeah, I mean, we played against Syracuse, and I was like, where am I supposed to go? I can't see anything.
Right. So that's the one thing, and I do like that zone against South Carolina, just because South Carolina is not a great three-point shooting team. Like, they shoot 33% from the three-point line. They really struggle offensively. They do want to get out in transition. But what's weird is they do have three guys in Dwayne Otis and Darius Thornwell and PJ Dozier who can score.
I've just talked myself into the under, so thank you.
I mean, I think everybody and the mother is going to take the under in this one.
I hope so.
Which is 135, which seems high.
Seems high. That seems really high.
Right. I was thinking it was going to be like 128.
Yeah.
So I like Baylor in this. I think, you know, we've seen Baylor win against good teams. It's not like I think people kind of think Baylor's the seven seed in this. Like, Baylor's the three seed for a reason.
I like Baylor too. I really do. They're better than years past in terms of talent wise.
They're deep too. Like, looking at the right, like Manuel Lecomte, when he's healthy and he's healthy right now, can shoot, and I really like him at that point guard spot. And then, you know, you have guys like Ish Wainwright, who just does a little bit of everything. Like, he's a guy that's going to put up 5, 5, and 5 every night. That's what you need.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement here. I like Baylor, and let's move on because this game.
Yeah, so that's kind of the one that we agree with is the worst of the eight. Going to the West now, not the worst of the eight, and I think probably the second most intriguing game.
I like
Gonzaga, West Virginia.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So I just think, again, I like teams that can travel well with what they do. West Virginia travels well because they just throw guys and run at you. And this is where Gonzaga worries me with their schedule. Not because I don't think they're a good team. I think they're a really, really good team. But when you're used to playing, I don't know, who are they playing in the West Coast Conference? I don't even know anymore, like San Francisco and all them, or.
But see, I never got that, like, because does Kentucky get, like, no one talks about, like, the SEC, I mean, SEC is better than the West Coast Conference, but the West, like, the SEC sucks.
I hear you, but they're going to play Arkansas, they're going to play Florida.
Well, that's where I like Gonzaga's at least non-conference. Like, Gonzaga's non-conference, they at least, they played Florida, they played Iowa State on neutral courts, they played Arizona on neutral court. They played Akron, who won the MAC regular season.
Okay, like, look who you're naming. Like, they have never played a team like West Virginia that's going to throw Adrian and Carter.
No, but
like, as soon as you take the ball out, you have a 7-foot, nasty-looking white guy trapping you with four other guards who are just going to come steal your lunch money.
But here's what I like. Like, West Virginia needs to score to set up that press.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that on a – you know, a dead ball, like a loose ball rebound.
They do if they shoot like they did last game.
Right. That's the thing. Notre Dame's defense isn't Gonzaga's defense. Gonzaga's the best defense in the country.
Yeah, they're huge. They have size. They defend.
They're deep. Like,
they rebound.
And the thing is, people think, like, Karnowski's a slow, methodical guy. Like, he moves well for a 7-1 guy.
He carries that frame.
He does. Like, he's a menace down there. They can bring in Zach Collins. They can bring in, you know, Killian Tilly, Jonathan Williams at 6'9". Like, they have a ton of size. They'll contest shots at the rim. I'm looking at Gonzaga's defense right now. They're 1 in adjusted defense. They're 1 in effective field goal percentage. They're 6 in 3-point percentage. 2-point percentage. I mean, they just kill you. They're 77th in block percentage. They're 64th in steal. Like, they're. I don't know if West Virginia can score enough to set up the press, which is where their advantage is against Gonzaga.
So you're saying it's the year of the Zags.
I think Gonzaga is the second most complete team in the country.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. All I was saying is what I'd be worried about if I were Gonzaga is playing a team that plays so unique and so crazy, so different, that maybe it slaps them in the face and then they're playing from behind, they're pressing because they're one seed and Mark Few has never made it to the Final Four and all that comes back in their face again.
That's the thing. I do agree with you on that. If West Virginia gets out to that early lead like they did against Notre Dame, it's over. Because I don't know if Gonzaga can come back from that. But
I don't know if it's over, but it's going to be like a slow, like methodical.
Right. It becomes playing at West Virginia's pace instead of Gonzaga's.
Yeah, and they do not want that. Another spread that's 3.5, right?
3.5. I'm going to go Gonzaga just because I think they win by like 7. But to me, Jonathan Williams needs to have a game. Like, who was it in the first game? South Dakota State, they were just daring Jonathan Williams to shoot, and he struggled that first half.
Yeah, no, again – I'm just sticking with the Zags. I'm sticking 3.5 Zags.
Yeah, I'm just sticking with who I think's the better team. I don't love it necessarily, but I just think Gonzaga's that good of a team. And the other thing is, I have a weak spot for guards that will post up. Mark Few will put Williams Goss in the post. I love that. Like, there's not enough guard-on-guard posting.
Let's move on.
Come on, you don't like that?
I do. I mean, we did that at Wisconsin. I never posted up because – I was like, I don't know what to do down here. I'm 6'1". How am I posting somebody up?
But the thing is, he'll pass out of it. Like, he'll make a little move and then kick out to, like...
No one's going to come double team me because they'd leave me. But we had good post-up guards, Gosser and Jordan Taylor. Jordan Taylor was an unbelievable post-up guard.
Taylor was a really good post guard.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you know. I'm sure you have, like, a hall of post-up guard list.
I'd love, I'm 5'9", and I still post up people when I can. I'd love it. Like, I play within the 6 feet. Like, I love guards. I play within 6 feet.
All right, moving on.
We got Arizona Xavier. This is a coach
versus matchup. I love this matchup.
Well, coaches Miller,
want to beat each other.
Sean Miller versus Chris Mack. Mack was like is a Miller guy. He's a Miller assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I love Chris Mack. I think he's a hell of a coach. Sean Miller is too, but I everybody knows Sean Miller from a national standpoint. Look what Chris Mack's done at Xavier. I mean, outside of your boys' buzzer beater last year against them, how many Sweet 16s in a row is this for them?
They are. I saw something like since 2008, they're the most.
Yeah, like they
they're just above Wisconsin. So 2008, they're the most Sweet 16s in the country.
Yeah, you just kind of have to pencil them in now every year, which is great.
Like, who they lose to Rape? Who do they lose? It was good.
They lost Miles Davis to harassment, quote harassment, alleged harassment. I guess I should say. Sumner tore his ACL. I mean, that's losing an NBA talent.
Huge losses.
Right. Like, your senior guard in Davis, who was a secondary ball handler and a great three-point shooter. And an NBA point guard.
Mm.
So it's like, yeah, have fun.
They
couldn't beat anybody besides DePaul.
They beat Butler. They beat Butler. Which was huge for them because they weren't going to get in the tournament without them.
I think they would have got in. They would have been sweating even more.
They lost six in a row and beat Butler twice.
They beat DePaul twice. Three times. Yeah.
But twice after they lost everybody.
Yeah. Back to back.
And so, like, if they didn't beat Butler, I was nervous for them. But that's Chris Mack. They were the last non-playing seed, and they're in the Sweet 16, arguably playing as hot as anyone.
Yeah,
right?
They beat the shit out of Florida State, and they pretty much handled Maryland.
I think they could give Arizona a game. I really do. I really do. Blewett is playing out of his mind. Pakura's got to play well.
Pakura's a kid, but he can go for 30 and it wouldn't shock anybody.
No, and he has to. I think he has to play well.
Sean
O'Mara?
Sean O'Mara, yeah.
He's still playing, which is great. I get a kick out of those guys who everyone's like, how long has he been there?
Now, the one thing with Xavier that they can kind of pester Arizona with is Xavier has size. Like, mm-hmm. Blewett's 6'6", Makura's 6'5", Gaston 6'9", Omar 6'10", Tyreek Jones 6'9", Gooden 6'4", Bernard 6'6", Kaiser 6'8". So everybody they throw out there is going to be 6'4" and above.
Yeah, and I guess we're talking a lot about X, but Arizona's freaking good.
No, I mean, I have Arizona winning it all.
Do you really?
That was my pick to win it all. It came down to who I thought was going to win Arizona Gonzaga.
And that was your champion?
That was whoever I thought won that would win it all, yeah.
Promise, sometimes those games, like, take the air out of you because it feels like a championship game that ask your boys at Kentucky and ask my boys at Wisconsin.
Yep.
The two best games of the tournament weren't the final. It was the final four games, and then neither of the team won the championship, which is just a crime.
Right.
UConn won that year. That was terrible.
I know. So, yeah. Spreading this one, since we mentioned everywhere else, is Arizona minus 7.5.
Yikes.
Ken Pom thinks it's going to be a 4-point game.
I think so. I like when Vegas puts a 7-point line, I always go with the favored team. Just about always. But here, I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean.
Any rivalry game, I take it into effect.
The question is, how well do they guard? I think you see the zone from Xavier again.
You have to. They're going to have to mix it up. They can't play man. They can't stick with them man. No way.
No, you have to run zone and you have to shade to Mark to Laurie.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a little bit on Trier too. But you want, like, you want Rolly Alkins and Kadeem Allen and Parker Jackson Cartwright to beat you. You don't want Trier and Laurie to beat you.
Is it Trier or is it Trier?
I don't know.
Oh, you said tournament earlier too, so I'm a little.
That's the correct way to pronounce it.
What is that? Is that your southern accent or whatever?
I was born in Jersey. I'm from the East Coast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's Tor. Tour is Tor. Nah, mint. That's how you spell tournament. That's how you pronounce it.
And people are gonna make fun of you for that.
Oh, so I know. Every year I argue about it. Tournament versus tournament.
We're not kidding.
I think you got to see zone from Xavier. I think
who got on this one? Obviously Arizona, and then what about the spread?
I'm gonna say Xavier covers at 7.5.
I do think too.
I think they get it by the hook.
I don't like 7-point spreads with this close of a rivalry, with this much going on. You got two coaches who know each other inside and out.
That's the thing. Mac knows Miller's game plan, and Miller knows Mac's game plan.
100%. 100%.
That's what happens when you play your former assistant coach. And not only that, but this is twice in 3 years they've met in the Sweet 16.
The thing is why I like Xavier even more, the more I think about it, is what do they have to lose?
Right.
It's scary. It's kind of scary if you think about it.
Well, that and like we said, they're probably playing they've had the two most impressive wins in terms of who they played and how much they won by.
Exactly.
So it's
– right. So
I like the size. I like Xavier's size. I think that's how you can kind of pester Arizona a little bit. Arizona's clearly the better team. You know, no one's denying that. I think Arizona wins. I think Xavier covers.
Okay. I'm going to put this one on like – the one I wouldn't be surprised if Xavier won, like, as an 11 seed, everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh, how did the 11 beat the 2?
Right.
But I wouldn't look at it like that. I would look at it as a team who's dangerous with size, who the coaches, like, it's a rivalry game. I could see it happening. I don't think it will because Arizona's just too good. But
and Xavier does have to go all the way out west, which I don't love.
Ooh, yikes.
Like that same thing with West Virginia. Like they have to go all the way out west.
Where is it? Sacramento? No, it's not Sacramento.
San Jose.
Jose. What arena is that? Where the Sharks play?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's shoot over to the top right.
Which again, another interesting one here. Purdue, Kansas. Man, I'll tell you what. Purdue could give Kansas some problems. Like they're both bad matchups for each other. Like, what gives Kansas problems are front courts that can score. That's what Caleb Swanigan does.
Uh-huh. They don't have size. That does worry me. Like, they don't have good size. Obviously, Lucas is a big fellow, but...
Yeah, but after that, I mean, Carlton Bragg's been vastly underwhelming.
Haas and Swanigan can just manhandle their whole front line.
Yeah, this is the game where Kansas really misses Azubuike.
Yeah,
the freshman that got hurt. But this is the game that they need him.
It's kind of like whoever imposes their will the most and like sets the tone of the pace of the game. Like if Kansas and I love this. I think I told you Kansas is my favorite team when I bet them because they never miss the corner three.
No, especially this year.
They never do. It's hilarious, especially at Allen Fieldhouse. Second half they could be like 11-point favorites up two. And then they'll hit like three corner threes in a row. It's like the greatest thing in the world. I love it.
I refuse to believe Svi Mykhailiuk is shooting 39.5% from the 3-point line. I've never seen him miss. I've never seen him miss, especially from the corner.
That's because they only put Kansas on at home on.
I know. On Monday nights,
hitting all their shots.
But what now? Here's what I'm interested in: is how does Painter use his lineup because he has to make a decision. Kansas doesn't have to make a decision. They're going to run Mason Jackson, Svi, and Devontae Graham with Landon Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Does Purdue run Swanigan and Haas, or do you keep Haas on the bench to start the game and run, you know, Thompson, Matthias, Edwards, and Swanigan? You know, some sort of matchup like that. Personally, I think for Purdue, I don't think you can run Swanigan and Haas out there together because defensively, that's a terrible matchup. Like Kansas will just kill. One of them has to guard either Josh Jackson or Mykhailo Hook.
Josh Jackson is too freaky for either.
Josh Jackson is going to have a monster game this game.
Yeah, I see that. I'm just trying to think here. Like, if I was Painter, do I try and – where's this game at, by the way?
This game is the Midwest, which is in – why the hell is it slipping my mind right now? Midwest is in Kansas City.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't – I was going to say, if it was somewhere like where Purdue could get a following because it's in the Midwest, like – Mackey Arena is one of the best places to play because that crowd is nuts. But if you have Kansas surrounded by all about that's going to be a fast paced game. You can't have Haas and Swanigan out there.
I don't think you can.
I don't think you can. The only time you can is if you take a lead
on the offensive side.
And like you, it's like an offense defense thing. Like yep. It's going to be a constant like subbing throughout the game to make sure the matchups make sense and wherever the score is, but like you cannot be down four trying to make a comeback with their pace. Because if as soon as they miss a shot, Kansas is down the floor and they're scoring.
Well, and like I said earlier, that means one of them is guarding either Jackson or Mykhailo Hook, and they're getting beat off the dribble. Like we saw what Deontay Burton did to him. Like Josh Jackson, if Swanigan's guard, Swanigan's one of his weaknesses. I mean, he's a hell of a player. One of his weaknesses is trying to guard on the perimeter.
He fouled.
Well, that's what I'm curious about. Like Jackson will drive at him. Mason will drive at him. Like Kansas draws fouls. They're really good at drawing fouls.
Yeah, and Swanigan, if he's not in his home comfort zone, he could come out and extend and overextend into fouls. So I don't know. The more I'm thinking Kansas.
Like I said though, they're both bad matchups for each other.
It depends on the pace of the game.
Yeah, because if Lucas gets in foul trouble, I don't know how Kansas plays.
-5 Kansas, 72% of the money I see is on that spread.
I'm probably taking Purdue with that at 5.
Yeah, now that I'm looking, I like this 157 over under. Man, that's scary.
I like the over.
That's a lot of points for Purdue to score.
I like the over because they'll score at the paint anytime they want. The question is, do they get enough stops?
This is weird on Vegas' part. I don't know. I'm just excited to watch how this one plays out now. That's weird. It's weird to have it at 157 and only Kansas -5.
I like Purdue in the over.
Ugh.
But put this up. This is one of the more intriguing games.
I'm gonna go Kansas under.
Okay.
Kansas under.
I think Kansas wins. I will say that. I do think Kansas wins. I think Purdue covers. Just because, I wish Matt Painter would, like, text me and say, here's what we're doing lineup-wise.
Kansas.
That's all that's going to matter to me. So
book
what
it.
What does Purdue Kansas?
Book it.
All right, you're going Kansas. All right. I wanted to – I think – I love this Oregon-Michigan matchup because Dana Altman and John Beilein are two of the best coaches in the country that do not get talked about enough.
No, they don't.
Like John Beilein, I think he might be the best offensive coach in the country.
146.5. Like that's crazy to me. 157 in that game, and then we got two of the best 3-point shooting teams scoring teams as of late at 146.5. I want to say it blows over, but because I'm saying that,
I'm just gonna
stay the hell away from it.
Well, that's because Michigan just plays slow. Like, Michigan is a really
they've
slow team.
Radical, but they've been scoring 70 plus.
Well, when you shoot 400% from the 3-point line.
No, I hear you. I'm just staying away from that total. This is pretty much a pick 'em. The way I look at it. the way Michigan's been playing, Oregon is just dangerous. I wonder. Talk to me about this. Does losing Chris Boucher really hurt them in this game?
I wouldn't say it really hurts them because Bell and Bigby Williams can still step out and guard Wagner and Donnell.
And what's his name? Curly-headed guy. The freshman, number 5.
DJ Wilson?
Wilson versus
Dylan Brooks is going to determine this matchup.
If you think that's going to determine this matchup, then yep. Oregon's going to win by 30 because Dylan Brooks is 10 times better than him.
Yeah, except not the way DJ Wilson has played recently. Like recent DJ Wilson looks like an NBA prospect. Like, looks like a first-round pick.
Yeah, and I guess this game is going to be – I don't know. Now I'm talking myself into the over. I can't see this staying under 146 with the firepower. And I see the flow of this game. Like, Oregon will speed them up. Not in a terrible way, but just where there's going to be more possessions and higher, like, especially if they get up. If Oregon gets up, Michigan is not bad from behind, because then it just forces them to be a little more aggressive and they're optimistic.
What scares me, though, is Oregon gives up a lot of three-pointers, but they defend them well. Like, they want you to shoot threes, but they're all contested threes. So, like, they give up the 215th most three-point attempts per field goal attempts, but they rank 23rd in the country in three-point percentage. It's like teams are shooting 37% threes on field goal attempts, but they're really only they're shooting 31% from that 37%. So,
I've made up my mind here. I think Dana Altman finally breaks through and gets to the Elite Eight. I think they've been in somewhat early of a knock out of this tournament, pretty early as of when
they had the Elite Eight last year.
Oh, that's right.
So back-to-back Elite Eights. Like, yeah, I think I like Oregon in this.
I still like Oregon. Still like Oregon.
Yeah, I think I like Oregon in this too. And I love this Michigan team. I had Michigan top 20 in my preseason. Felt like a fool all year, and it's recently just paid off that I've been correct on them. But man, this Oregon team was supposed to be top 5 all year. You got Brooks back from injury. I mean, obviously you don't get Boucher, but Tyler Dorsey has some of the biggest balls in the country. Like, he'll step up and hit a shot.
Yeah, never gets phased. And I love the reverse psychology I just did on myself. I just talked myself into the over, which means
you're all over.
No, that means I'm betting the under now.
So, I will say, though, this is again, I think this actually might be the second game I'm like looking forward to the most, just because I love Beilein and Altman so much.
Wait, you already said Gonzaga.
I know. I think this passes Gonzaga, West Virginia.
I agree. So you're saying UK UCLA is your number one?
I mean, who wouldn't have that number one?
No, I hear you.
We'll go there since we transitioned.
I can make an argument for Oregon, Michigan, but the names in the UCLA UK game is just ridiculous.
Let's jump Carolina Butler to UK UCLA since we're talking about it now. What's your one matchup in this that you have to watch?
I don't see how Butler can keep up with North Carolina. Butler's big white guy is good.
Andrew Kravitz.
Yeah, I don't know how to say his name, so I just
Kravitz.
Yeah, the big white. It's got all the C's and Z's where I don't know how to pronounce. UNC and Butler. UNC's bigs, Hicks, Meeks.
Bradley,
like, they will run circles around him. Like, if UNC is gonna go on a 9-0 run like they always do, and then they're gonna drought like they always do, but for some reason I just see them running away with this.
Here's the thing, though, is how healthy is Joel Berry?
He's fine. I hate when people do this. I hate when they've been a great player all year and.
But he had, like, there was the reports last week that he missed practice and had his ankle. I think it was his ankle, but he missed practice. There was those reports last week.
He's late in the season after playing.
Sure.
I get that it has an effect, but when push comes to shove, people always go, "Oh, he's hurt. That's why he's not shooting well."
To me, it's because Roy Williams' system might be the most important in the country, just because of how Roy Williams wants them to run, know when to push tempo, when not. Like, he relies on the point guard for that.
And that's why Marcus Paige was an unreal quarterback for them, because he's really good at controlling the pace. Joel Berry's more of like a scoring opportunistic point guard, where like it's not necessarily like push the pace and find guys like he's had in the past with Kendall Marshall. But
Marshall was so good.
I don't see how they lose to Butler here. Butler's really good. Butler's really good. I like their squad. They've been solid. They're kind of like a Wisconsin, kind of like a Michigan, kind of like a Purdue. They kind of got a Big Ten style in the Big East. But again, Carolina. I want that Carolina UK matchup.
Even Carolina UCLA, like,
Yeah, or whatever. One of those, that's going to be an awesome game.
Yeah, I don't know how I don't know how Butler matches the depth of Carolina or the size. Like, Butler's rolling out a bunch of like 6'7"s, you know, and but their guards are small. Like, Kamar Baldwin is 6'3", or not, he's 6 foot. Avery Woodson 6'2". Tyler Lewis is 5'10". You
Yep.
know, I mean, outside of Barry, you're throwing out, you know, Nate Britt 6'1", Kenny Williams, who's hurt. You got seventh Woods is 6'2", but super athletic. Justin Jackson's like your 6'8", 3". So
Right.
it's, yeah, I'm going Carolina.
It's 7.5. I even take the 7.5, to be honest.
Yeah, I might agree with you on that one too.
I'm taking 7.5, Carolina.
Plus, I don't think they put up back-to-back bad games like they did against Arkansas.
Yeah. All right. Well, UK, UCLA, I don't know where to start. No one likes Steve Alford.
You have to start with De'Aaron Fox versus Alonzo Ball, right?
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
Because, like, the one thing, the earlier in the year, De'Aaron Fox outplayed Lonzo Ball. Like, despite UCLA won, everybody walked away. Scouts walked away. Everybody walked away going, De'Aaron Fox got the better of Lonzo Ball in the individual matchup.
So what do you think is important to these guys playing? Their NBA draft stock or winning this game or a combination of both?
I think they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, they do. I mean, this is what happens. This is how you get your name up in the draft. Like,
yeah, it's like, you know, like Ball, Monk, and Fox are all, top 10 guys.
Mm-hmm.
But someone like Bam could go from 22 to 16.
This is when you do it. This
yeah,
is
or TJ Leaf could go from, you know, 20 to 12.
Yeah, this is when you do it.
So, you know, I think at this point in the game, they all know their first round picks, top 10 picks, lottery picks. It's winning. And then with winning comes maybe jump up 2 spots, 3 spots, whatever.
Yeah, just a 500,000, 700,000 more in your rookie contract.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean,
what do you? I'm throwing the questions at you now. Who do you like? You know them inside and out. I'm quite honestly not that impressed with this Kentucky team. Like, I've seen them in years past, but enough of me, Mr. UK.
The thing is, Kentucky's defense has been playing a lot better lately. I mean, they played Wichita, beat Wichita at, like,
Wichita. Oh my goodness, they didn't run anything. It was I couldn't believe it.
But that was what they played at Wichita's tempo, which showed me a lot more.
Like, yeah, they played at Wichita's tempo and looked really good.
Yeah,
not really good, but looked really good on defense.
They beat them doing Wichita's thing.
Yeah, I mean, that showed
a lot about their defense.
Yeah.
And that's one thing with these two teams.
Stop UCLA.
That's the thing. Can they stop Lonzo Ball? And not Lonzo Ball. Can they stop? You know what's weird? It's Thomas Welsh. Thomas Welsh gives Kentucky troubles the last two times they played. Like, he's killed them.
And I don't know if you credit that to the young like inexperience. Well,
Kentucky's weaknesses are four. Like, Willis is not a great defensive player. Gabriel is just so raw, he gets lost.
In my mind, Willis isn't that good of an offensive player either.
I mean, he's a shooter.
Kinda.
But that's what he is. He's out there to shoot.
That's what I'm saying. I still like to know his percentage. I've never been
He's shooting 39% from three.
Okay. All right. I had like 35. And I think if you're a step out four, you gotta shoot at least like 38 or above. Otherwise you're wasting size.
He's a little over 39. He's 39.2.
Okay. All right,
plus,
he didn't pass
meters
versus
best.
Wichita, so
he's
I was
probably their best post passer.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure because he did not look good against Wichita.
No.
And I was like, I'm pegging him for.
Well, that's the thing when he doesn't look liability. Good, like when he doesn't play well, he looks real bad.
Yeah, it's almost like a liability.
But
I've been there, Derek Willis. I've been there.
So here's what I've said about UCLA all year: is they just need to be average defensively. For UCLA. Kentucky, we've seen them now hit average defense.
165.5. Under.
Everyone wants to bet the over in this one.
Under.
Who do you think wins? I'll ask it to you. Who do you
recap.
Think wins?
Like, I want to go through and recap. So I know we agreed on a lot, and we'll probably bet the same ones we agree on, and then I'll do some separate to see where we end up.
We agreed on Oregon at or I have Oregon plus 1.5. I'm taking Oregon plus 1.5.
No, I think we have the teams right. I think the totals is where we differ.
Yeah. West Virginia, Gonzaga. Just to recap, we have Oregon. We're taking Oregon. We're taking Gonzaga.
Axe.
Xavier, Purdue. I'm taking Purdue. You like Kansas.
I like Kansas.
We both like North Carolina. We both like Baylor. And
Differ on Wisconsin, Florida, just to.
Wisconsin, Florida, yeah, is a little different. I'm taking UK plus one in this.
All right. Why? What makes the difference?
Their defense. I think they finally figured out their defense enough to run UCLA off the 3-point line, which is what you have to do. You have to run UCLA off the 3-point line.
Right. Similar to Wisconsin, Florida, I'm going UCLA, not because I don't think UK's good, just because I don't know if they match up well enough in this game.
Yeah, the other thing I'm thinking too, it's going to be like a 70-30 split, if not more, of UK fans to UCLA fans there.
Yeah, no, that can make a difference
Yeah,
too.
down in Memphis. So,
Down in Memphis.
yeah, down in Memphis. So yeah, it'll be interesting. We agree though. This is if you get to watch one game, if you're a casual fan, this is the game that you watch, right? So.
This again, this one, Oregon, Michigan, I think Gonzaga, West Virginia, then Arizona, Xavier, Kansas, Purdue,
Yeah.
Wisconsin, Florida, Baylor.
South Carolina.
I think I skipped UNC, Butler, throw them somewhere in the middle.
They're probably,
Somewhere
yeah.
bottom, because I think
They're 6 or 7. I
yeah,
think probably 7.
I don't think it's going to be that exciting a game.
No. So, all right, let's get into the question portions of the show again. We asked on Twitter, follow the show at Fundamentally SD. You'll see both of us tweet it out. We got some good questions. I kind of like it. I was surprised. Usually I get a bunch of dumb questions. I was shocked.
Hang on, maybe recap iTunes for us or where we're gonna be.
Yeah, so we'll be on SoundCloud to start. If you go to SoundCloud and search the Fundamentally Sound podcast, we'll pop up. You'll see our logo. It's blue and red, for obvious reasons. With the orange hoop and our name. So go on SoundCloud. We are in the process of getting submitted to iTunes. Hopefully that's done in a week. There's no timetable. It just kind of they tell you when it's good to go. So yeah, right now it'll be on SoundCloud, which everybody has access to because it's just a website. You don't need an iPhone or an Android or anything like that for it. Again on Twitter, Fundamentally SD. First question. Who's the coach that you trust the most, and who do you trust the least out of these 16?
Most and the least. Who do I trust the most? I trust, man.
It's a good question.
It's a really good question. I guess I could pick flaws out of everyone that I turn to. I turn to UNC and Roy. I don't trust Roy. I don't trust
No.
how inconsistent his team is. I can't
I've
pick.
never been a big Roy fan.
Huh?
I've never been a huge Roy
Yeah,
fan.
I think he gets a lot of talent, but I don't think he's the greatest coach in the world.
No, especially in game and when it comes like, I mean, he just sits on timeouts.
I don't trust. Gosh, that's a good question. I guess I'm going to go Bill Self just because I like their matchups the rest of the way. I think they can make it to the Final Four. Is that a weird choice?
No. I mean, when I ranked the coaches, I had him second behind Calipari.
And I was going to say Coach Cal, but for some, and I guess I chose Self over Coach Cal because of
I
how much
think it's
better I think the matchups are for Kansas.
those two though, right? Like, if you're saying, if I'm reading this question as who do you trust the most in the sense of they're going to stay out of their own way and,
Let the players do it, stick to their
right.
system.
I think it's and not quote lose you a game. I think it's those. I mean, Huggins possibly few you could throw in there. You know, I mentioned Altman and
Beeline.
yeah, Beilein. It might be Beilein. I think I might trust Beilein the most.
Yeah, I trust him. I
He's the
really.
one that's going to draw up the play. I mean,
Yeah, I
actually, here's
believe
the
in what he
thing.
does. I believe in what he does. The
Yeah, I think it might be
least.
Beilein. I
I
think it
think
might go
we're gonna
Beilein.
do the least. Not that I think he's a bad coach, but I think if we're gonna do the least, think we're all in agreement that Mark Few has a little bit to prove.
Oh, see, I would go – I'd rather go someone like Mike White just because he's new.
Yeah, but that's not fun. That's not fun. People.
I also love Mark Few, so I will not say his name.
I guess I'm watching the world burn a little bit with my choice, just because like it's kind of fun to have that one guy
who
can't make it. I guess I can throw Sean Miller in that too, just kind of down there. If Gonzaga or Arizona doesn't make the Final Four, I just want to see those fan bases talk about their coaches like they can't get it done when they really should just be like happy.
Like, could you imagine if Arizona loses in the Elite Eight again? It'd be like the fourth time Sean Miller's lost in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, see, like, that's what I'm saying. Let's just go with those two. You can stick with your Butler coach.
All right, this one's just for you. Who was the most frustrating person that you guarded when you were in college?
Who is the most frustrating person I guarded in college? Everybody. Everybody. I guess James White, that last game, was really, really tough to guard for me. He was a lefty and
James Young, you mean?
James Young, excuse me. I said James White.
Yeah, I was thinking like the old Cincinnati guy.
No, I was thinking James White because he's a Badger who just should have been Super Bowl MVP.
Or him too.
Yeah, no, James Young he was a lefty, smooth, off the dribble, could shoot over me.
Also liked to dunk on people when he could.
Yeah, Gary Harris was tough to guard. I'd have to go back and think about that. I wish I would have saw that one. I could have prepped a little better.
All right. Here's another one.
I'm sure I'll think of it at some point as we keep doing this podcast.
Here's one that's a little bit more for you too, but from a fan perspective for me as well. Do you like these games being played in these big football arenas? Does it help the game or does it hurt?
I'm indifferent if the arena makes sense. Like if you're going to get a lot of people in there and it's going to be loud, great. But if you're going to get a lot of people in there and it's going to be like a weird – I don't even know if the fans like it. I went to Houston last year and I was watching the game from like a good ticket and I was like, I can't see anything. This is stupid. So yeah, you get big numbers of people there.
Yeah, but you're watching the big screen.
Yeah, you honestly watch the big screen and you're like, I guess it's cool that I'm here. I guess I can take a picture and put it on Instagram and people are like, yeah, that's awesome. But you're not really enjoying the game as well as you are at a good NBA arena. You're getting
What football stadiums or domes did you play in during the tournament?
Obviously, Jerry's World was huge. Right. I mean, it was the most people at an NCAA college game ever, I believe, in person.
Was it weird shooting there? Or?
So in practice, like when we were there for shoot around, we were there for practice. It was really hard because I think and we played in others, but like it was really hard just because it was that big. But then when you got in the game, I've always been a proponent. When you get in the game, you're just playing. You don't really think about all that other stuff. And I shot it pretty well against Kentucky. So I really didn't mind it, but I struggled in practice. But once you're in the game, you just
don't think about it as much.
Yeah, you're just playing.
Yeah, I think from a TV standpoint, everyone kind of looks back to the, like I mentioned, the 2011 Final Four where it was in Houston and just bad shooting numbers.
Yeah,
I don't think it helps or hurts.
Yeah, and the teams in there are like
right. What teams are there?
That's what I'm saying. I'm kind of indifferent. If they could find a happy medium, that would make me happy.
Somebody wants to know what remaining low-seeded team has the best chance to win it all.
What do we let's define low-seeded? Where are we putting the cutoff?
I would say Michigan is a 7, South Carolina is a 7, Xavier is an 11. I would think those three, and Wisconsin is an 8.
Yeah.
I would say most people probably say Wisconsin, right?
I think most people would say Michigan, to be honest.
Michigan, yeah. It's definitely those two.
You know, Wisconsin style, like, it's proven that this year that this team is a little – they're still just a little rocky for me where I don't, like, feel confident with this – like, we really don't know what we're going to get out of these guys, to be completely honest. Because even when they were winning, it was like, what's going to happen next? Michigan just playing the way Beilein has wanted them to get to all year, and they had some injuries, so they're finally – like, they're a dangerous team.
I would say, though, the one thing is Wisconsin has, quote, the easiest region to get out of.
True.
So
yeah,
then it just becomes a final. Well, if they make it out.
Okay, I guess, yeah, you know, good point. If we're going to talk about who can win it.
Yeah, that's the question. Who can win it? I think it might be Wisconsin just because of the reason.
Yeah, if you look at where they're positioned, you got to take Wisconsin. Michigan would have to beat Oregon, Kansas, and UK or UCLA or UNC. Like, good luck.
Right, right.
Yeah, those are good questions.
Yeah, I would agree it's Wisconsin. You're on the easier side of the bracket. So I guess in theory you might throw South Carolina out there, but I just don't like that team as much as
Michigan. They're as good and experienced. Xavier, their road's too tough. Yeah, Wisconsin's the best seed. Did he say low or high? I never know what to do, high or low, because it's like high is like a higher number.
He said low seeded team.
But I think he meant high. Or
he meant which is the worst seeded team.
Yeah, that's how we're getting.
Last question, since we're coming up here, just hitting a little bit over an hour. College officiating. It's been the story of the tournament. It's been the story of the season. It's been bad. I mean, is it as bad as when you play? Like, you know, I'll default to you, former player, now fan. Is it really as big as a story as it seems to be? What can be fixed?
I thought about this, and I don't really have the best answer. I think I know why it's happening.
Which is?
You know, it's one shining moment, right? Like, this is the time to shine for college basketball. You are in the spotlight. This is your time to either make the big shot, hit the buzzer beater, get an upset. And unfortunately, I think the referees are taking that to heart like it's for them. And unfortunately, it's not. And
well, the thing is, they advance based on how they are graded out. So I think they want to make those calls.
But how does that make sense then?
It doesn't, but I think more coaches will say, oh, well, he called fouls. I'm just trying to think like them. Like,
no, I know, and I'm trying to think too, because it's like the whole Twitter universe went nuts on a flagrant foul.
That was so bad. That's just common sense. That's just common sense.
I get it. Trust me. I get it. He pushed him. Yep. He didn't go for the ball.
Letter of the law, it's a flagrant foul, sure.
Someone have common sense. Come on.
Here's how I think you fix it. A, you need to make these officials full-time just because they're not. That's step one. Step two is you put together a little committee or whatever in charge of these refs, and it's made up of former players or coaches. So they can sit there and say, here's what happens during the game. Here's what we look for in terms of fouls. Here's what we don't necessarily care about. And you can go based on that. Like, why are we having people that didn't play the game have this input? Like,
exactly.
Let former players and coaches say, here's what we want. Here's what makes the game smoother for us. Here's what we, you know, here's what we get mad about. Here's what we don't care about. I think you need to start incorporating former players and coaches somehow into this, like, you know, committee to oversee refs.
Unfortunately, former players aren't, like, graduating and be like,
I know,
I have to make a difference.
I know. But it's such an easy, like, well, if you make officials full-time, you can make these guys full-time, and it's an easy job out of college. Or when you're in your 30s or 40s or whatever.
Yes, there needs to be a farm system of some sort, and people.
It does. I mean, it's a good old boys club when it comes to refs.
It really is. I mean, I like a lot of the referees. I can tell you one referee that does a great job is Gene Steratore.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to get too many complaints.
Look, it's hard to complain about a guy who refs in the NFL.
Right.
Because I can't imagine what they say to him or what like – the parallel from that to this is right. There is none. Like,
no,
so
I'm sure
he doesn't
follow college basketball.
He likes to have a good time. Like, we need more refs like that who don't take it as their time to shine.
Well, that and you just need consistency.
He shines because he doesn't shine.
Right, right.
There needs to be more of that.
To me, as a fan, it just comes down to consistency. Like, when I watch a game and in the first half you're calling it tight and then the second half you're driving and getting murdered and there's no foul – what changed?
What it comes down for me, I just want to see the refs let the players play it out. I'd rather see missed calls versus calling a ticky tack there, and then when push comes to shove, being quiet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I think that's – I guess we're kind of saying the same thing in different ways.
Yeah, just be consistent. Like,
just be consistent, but be consistent in letting the players play it out.
Right.
I think that's a win-win for everybody.
I'd be fine with that. All right, let's end it there with that last question. We just hit you guys with a little over an hour, which is what we're planning to do from here on out. Just to recap again, follow the show at FundamentallySD. We're going to try to do this once a week. We'll try to aim for the same day just to make life easier for everybody. Go to SoundCloud, soundcloud.com, search the Fundamentally Sound podcast. I will tweet it out. Ben will tweet it out. That is where we are for now. We are in the process of getting it on iTunes. Once it's on iTunes and Stitcher and all that good stuff for Android and iTunes users, it'll be in the bio. It'll be everywhere. We'll tweet it out there. Follow us as well. I'm sure you guys are already, but if not, follow Ben at Ben Brust, BRUST. Follow me at Barstool Reegs, REAGS. Ben, any last words?
Oh, it was fun. It was fun. We could go on and on.
We could. We have to limit ourselves.
Yeah, I'm fired.
We want people to come back for more.
I'm fired up.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, the plan is it's going to be college basketball centric. We're both more college basketball guys than we are NBA. Mid-State does a great job with NBA. Follow for that.
Yeah,
we'll touch on the draft. We'll touch on, I'm sure, the playoffs and the finals for the NBA, just because it'll be going on when we're talking about weekly stuff.
And quite frankly, I think everyone would agree that regular season NBA basketball isn't worth necessarily talking about on a daily basis every day anyway. So I think we'll be touching it at the right time.
Right. So, yeah, like I said, this will be college basketball centric. We'll talk about recruiting in the off season. We'll talk about the draft. We'll talk about coaching changes. We'll talk about transfers.
We didn't even get to a lot today.
We have plenty. So, like I said, we'll be doing this once a week. Again, soundcloud.com.
Maybe more.
Yeah, possibly.
We'll see how.
Soundcloud.com. Search the Fundamentally Sound podcast. Follow Twitter, Fundamentally SD. Follow Ben Brust. Follow Bart.